Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR 96.3, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. Well, COVID-19 has hit all of us in some shape or form, whether it's been individually or through family members, friends, or acquaintances. It has been all-encompassing. But the coronavirus has especially hit certain communities hard as the Omicron variant continues to infect a record number of people here in the United States. A goal of some health advocates is to figure out how to lessen the impact on underserved communities, which are often predominantly made up of people of color. Tonight, we're asking some questions, seeking some answers. The phone lines are open. We'd like to hear from you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Joining us tonight to help with this conversation is Dr. Melissa Clark. She is the co-founder of Black's Coalition Against COVID-19 and the CEO of the BHE Group A Health Literacy Company Group. She's also an emergency physician. Also, Mustafa Abdul Salam, he is a facilitator in Ward 8 with his community economic planning. Again, phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Clark and Mr. Abdul Salam, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And thanks for having me as well.
Dr. Clark, let's talk about COVID-19 in underserved communities. Is it a real thing that it is hitting those communities especially hard? And if so, why or why not?
It is absolutely hitting communities of color disproportionately, and especially it's very clear in the Black community in D.C. So we know that Ward 7 and 8 in D.C. have high percentages of African-American population throughout the city. And unfortunately, we're seeing that death rates in those wards are higher compared to the rest of the city. If you look at proportionate deaths across the city by race, African-Americans account for 77% of the deaths, but we're only 48% of the population. For Hispanics, it's roughly even. They're about 11% of the population and account for about 10% of the deaths. So there is definitely worse outcomes when it comes to COVID-19 for African Americans in the district.
Why is that, Dr. Clark?
There are many reasons. Number one, we know from the very beginning of the pandemic that African Americans are disproportionately frontline workers. We were called out to work, to address the service needs without wearing masks, because at the beginning of the pandemic, masks were not yet encouraged. And so the spread started from that point and has continued on. There has also been doubt sowed differentially in the African-American community about efficacy of vaccines. We know that that has been an issue with disinformation to actively discourage African-Americans from getting vaccinated. And then other issues that account for spread in the community have to do with, population density, also having to do with lack of trust in the healthcare system overall due to historic reasons, as well as what I call contemporary reasons. When we go to get help in the healthcare system, a lot of times we're talked down to, we're disrespected. And so that has fostered just in general a feeling of distrust with information that comes from the healthcare system. And then lastly, as you remember, throughout the beginning of the pandemic, once the vaccine showed up, there was a lot of distrust shown and seeded throughout the community regarding the CDC and other institutions that were giving guidance around the vaccine. So I think all these things taken together for the African-American community have definitely been reasons for a disproportionate number of deaths. And then I think the most important thing is the underlying health of the Black community in terms of health care disparities that have put us at risk because of underlying health conditions such as obesity, lung disease, heart disease, et cetera, to suffer disproportionately from COVID, because we know that COVID preys on those kinds of conditions disproportionately. So all those things taken into account have something to do with the disproportionate effects of COVID in the Black community.
Mustafa, you are working on the ground there in Ward 8, dealing with health care issues in the community. I know that there's going to be a town hall meeting later tonight, and some recommendations are going to be presented. Talk to us a little bit about what those recommendations will be and what you hope will come out of the town hall meeting tonight.
Well, thank you. And I agree with everything that Dr. Clark talked about. But I want to add one piece that I think we tend to overlook. And I think it's important, whether it's COVID or any of our other health or social issues. When we look at Ward 3 as relates to COVID, their rate of incidence of being effective is like we're three times higher than them about in terms of Ward 8. And as it relates to death, you know, it's markedly different. But at the same time, before COVID, the health department came out with a study on health equity that established that the life expectancy in Ward 3 is 88 years as opposed to 72 years in Ward 8. So even before the pandemic, we were already seeing the kind of disparity between wards, and it's based in economic reality. So that when you look at Ward 3, the other reality is that the income in Ward 3 or the medium income is three times or four times higher than what is in Ward 8. So economics plays a significant role in all of our issues, and particularly health. You cannot separate our health situation from our economic development situation. For the last 400 years, we have struggled to get some parity and equity as relates to resources. And in 2022, we're still in a bad shape in terms of not being able to fully compete with the economic, the reality of the larger community. So we got to connect economics to health and economics to many of the things in the community. So a part of our project in Ward 8 is to come up with a plan that talks about what do we need to do over the next 5, 10, 20 years to reposition the community so that as gentrification takes place, we can benefit from wealth-building activities so that the individual residents in Ward 8, Ward 7, and throughout the district can find themselves in a better financial situation so that when things like the pandemic hit, we have options just like everybody else to be able to take care of ourselves and not be so at risk. So I think it's critical that we begin to embrace wealth building as a strategy to deal with not only our health issues, but being able to survive in the district that is slowly moving towards an economic level that most people are not going to be able to afford.
So you are tying economics to healthcare / COVID. 202.
No question. Yeah. And there's a direct relationship. And just look at some of the challenges that we have in trying to
hold your thought, survive any
situation health-wise.
Mustafa, hold your thought. I want you to hold your thought. I want you to continue that, but I want to make sure we get our callers in, then we're going to come back to and let you finish your point. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tonight, we're talking about COVID-19 and its impact on underserved communities. What is it doing to those communities? How can we help? What policies can be instituted to change the disproportionate impact on those underserved communities vis-a-vis other communities in the nation and especially here locally? 202-319-7810 is the phone number. Let's go to the phone lines. Brian is calling from the district. Go right ahead, Brian.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
My name is Brian Walker. I sort of have a question and a statement, and maybe the doctor or the healthcare person can kind of elaborate on this. I've been following this pandemic since January 2020, when I saw the first case in Seattle, and you know it took about probably in from my recollection maybe about 2 or 3 months before we really saw an influx of cases in Washington D.C., Maryland, and Virginia, and I said to myself, wow, we weren't wearing masks, we weren't vaccinated. It took almost a whole year to even get an approval on the vaccine. So finally we get the vaccine, we're all masked up, and now this Omicron variant is going through us like wildfire. And I said to myself, we're all wearing masks now, we're all vaccinated. How is this variant moving so quickly and so proficiently, even through vaccinated people that are wearing masks that weren't wearing masks a year and a half ago? And I said to myself, logically, the only thing I can think of, and this is a question or a statement, it's got to be coming from the people that are vaccinated. Because if we're wearing the mask and we are vaccinated and the people that are vaccinated catching it, where is it coming from? It's just like a cold. If I sneeze on you, you catch the cold. But where is it coming from?
All right,
to make everybody catch it so quickly and so, I mean, in such close proximity. It's unbelievable.
Let me let the doctor jump in on that, Brian. His question is probably similar to many, Dr. Clark, is that if the numbers of vaccinated people are going up, there are still challenges to get people vaccinated. If the numbers are going up, why are more people getting COVID? And if the numbers are disproportionate in underserved communities, those numbers obviously are going to go up in those communities. Would that be correct? Are the numbers... Let me rephrase this in the question here. Are the numbers of those unvaccinated and underserved communities, communities of color, lower than in the larger population? Dr. Clark.
Yes. Excellent question, Brian. And I want to first start off because there were several things that you asked in your question, but to address the question of the percentages of vaccination in minority communities. So in D.C., about 67.5% of the overall population is vaccinated. So not everybody is vaccinated. Among African Americans, that rate on average across the city is only 40%. And then if you drill down into certain neighborhoods, even within Ward 8, there's vaccination rates of less than 30% in some of those various pockets in the city that are mainly fall into Ward 7 and 8. So, yeah, there's a wide variety of vaccination rates, and we also see that same thing across the country. So from county to county across the country, vaccination rates vary. So when we see Omicron spreading like wildfire through the population, it's not that it's coming from vaccinated people or unvaccinated people. There's a significant reservoir of people who are unvaccinated. That's the first point. The second point is, the COVID of 2019 and 2020 is different than the COVID right now. So as you mentioned, Brian excellently pointed out that it took 3 months for the first cases to pop up in this area. The rate of spread of that particular original COVID strain was probably about 9 to 10 times less infectious than the current Omicron variant. And so this variant spreads like wildfire because it is so much more infection. Now, what is a variant? A variant comes up every time.
Dr. Clark, yes. I want you to hold that because I want to give you time to really get into that because I know the music's going to start playing in a minute. We're going to take a break.
Okay, sure.
But I want you to be able to really expound on that and let it breathe. And before we go, I know, Mustafa, you're going to be leaving us here in the second hour. So please tell us about, again, very quickly, your community meeting tonight, where it is and when it begins.
Well, unfortunately, we're in the middle of it. I kind of stepped away to participate here. But there's going to be other town hall meetings dealing with other subject matter. I would encourage, if you're interested, to go on our website, which is WHCED plan, and that represents Ward 8 Community Economic Development Plan. If you put that in your browser, our website will come up, and you can get all the information you need about what we're trying to do in Ward 8. And if you want to participate, you can register for all the future town hall meetings that we're going to have.
Mustafa Abdul Salam, thank you so much for being with us and the work that you're doing in Ward 8. We're going to continue this conversation. We're going to take a quick break. Don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com. Download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone. Hear the program live in its entirety. If you're on the phone line, stay right there. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. The original Quiet Storm with John Mons is next on 96.3 WHUR. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 on your FM dial. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment tonight. We're talking about COVID-19 and its impact on underserved communities, what it means for those in those communities, what it means for the hospitals that are in those communities, the healthcare workers in those underserved communities, and more. Phone lines are open. We'd like to hear from you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Joining us for the second half of this conversation is Dr. Melissa Clark. She's the co-founder of Black's Coalition Against COVID-19 and CEO of the BHE Group A Health Company. Dr. Clark, you were making a point, and I wanted to be sure that you could continue it. Please go right ahead.
Yes, I was just explaining what a variant is, and it was back to Brian's question about, you know, is this being spread by vaccinated people? So anytime an infection from a virus happens in your body, the purpose of it from the virus's standpoint is to make more virus. It takes over your body's machinery, your cell's machinery, and starts to pump out new baby viruses. In that manufacturing process, sometimes errors are made and substitutions are made, and so it results in a slightly different virus than originally infected you. Anytime that happens, anytime you have a virus infection, there is an opportunity for a variant, a variation, to arise. So sometimes those variants have an advantage. They can spread more easily, like we're seeing with Omicron. With Delta, it could make people sicker, which Delta seemed to make people sicker than the original strain of the virus. And so it doesn't always happen that there's an advantage. Actually, a minority of the time there's an advantage, but as long as one emerges, that's all it needs to take off and run rampant through the population. So what we've seen with Omicron is that it's developed a way to maneuver around the antibodies that exist from prior Delta infection and also antibodies that arise as a result of vaccination. But the key difference is this. If you are vaccinated and plus or minus boosted, and you get Omicron, it's a mild disease. It's like the cold. Or if you aren't boosted but fully vaccinated, it might be as bad as the flu in terms of, you know, how body aches and chills, etc. But if you're unvaccinated, you have a much higher chance of ending up in the hospital. The spread is less if you are vaccinated. So throughout the pandemic, what we've seen is that people who are unvaccinated have a 2 to 3 higher times rate of getting infected. They have a 10 to 13 times higher rate of ending up in the hospital and a 15 times higher rate of dying from COVID. And so that is what the advantage of having getting vaccinated is, it protects you from hospitalization, severe COVID, and death.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. The doctor is in the house, and we are specifically talking about COVID-19 and how it is affecting communities of color, those communities also that are underserved. 202-319-7810. You have a question, you have a comment. Do you live in one of those communities that you deem underserved? Are there issues that you want to see addressed, that you're dealing with, that aren't being addressed either by the leaders in your community, healthcare officials? 202-319-7810. Let's go to the phone lines. Manuel is calling from the district. Go right ahead with your question or comment.
Good evening, sir, and I would like to say good evening to your audience. I just want to make a comment on one of your guest speakers, what he made. He said, how are people that have been vaccinated still catching it? Because the medicine ain't strong enough. That's why we're still catching it. And also, I mean, these scientists and doctors need to stop playing with people's lives. It was a pandemic in 1720, 1820, 1920, and it's 2020 now, you know, and 2120 going to be another one. You know what I'm saying? I mean, and it's just a way to get rid of some people. You know, every 100 years, there usually be a war.
You see a conspiracy, if I can drill down on it, and if I'm correct in using that word, how is this conspiracy being manufactured? How is it, and what people are being getting rid of specifically, and how is that being done? Because I've heard this before, right?
Yes, yes.
And so how does that process work? How do you pick who you're getting rid of?
The poor. The poor so affect the poor.
Okay, and so how is that being done?
I mean, by putting the virus out here. There's a new strain coming out. It's called Delta Clone.
So
they didn't put that out yet, but it's coming. Wait till another 2 or 3 weeks. There's a Delta Clone.
So you believe that medical officials are putting the virus out, especially in underserved communities. Would that be correct?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha. Got you. Well, thank you so much, Manuel. I appreciate your perspective. You know, Dr. Clark, we want to sort of brush that off, right, and say, oh, Manuel, this is an extreme point. But I'm sure you've heard this before, right? How do you deal with that viewpoint? Do you try to convince people otherwise, or do you know that's just out there and people are going to have their own opinions? And what is the effects of that opinion on healthcare and caution and precautions?
Yeah, and thank you for that comment from the listener. You know, this was the same concern about HIV, that it was specifically manufactured and put out there. And I heard the gentleman go back to 1720 in terms of epidemics. Epidemics go back even before that. If you remember in the Bible, in Jesus' time, they talked about leprosy and all the leprosy that he had to cure. Humankind has existed with diseases probably since the dawn of time. They don't need to be manufactured and put out there. They occur naturally. And we can go back in history predating any kind of technology that would have existed to be able to, quote unquote, put it out there to see that epidemics have been happening from the dawn of time. And as he mentioned, they seem to occur in every 100 years or so. So I don't think that if you look back in history that you could claim that this current pandemic is necessarily the result of someone specifically putting it in the population. And then, you know, my focus is not necessarily where it came from, as so much so as making sure that we are protected against it. And we as African Americans, for all the reasons that I outlined, and also other communities of color, Latino, Native American, Asian and Pacific Islanders, have all been disproportionately affected. I agree with Mr. Mustafa, who's not on the line here. Neighborhood and place has so much to do with your economic status and your ability to protect yourself against disease. But there are things that we can do, short of the long-term plan that Mr. Mustafa has, which I think sounds wonderful. But in the immediate public health, getting vaccinated, he mentioned that the medicine isn't strong enough. We are developing it, and the medical researchers are in the process of trying to improve on vaccines every day. And given how quickly the turnaround was needed to produce something that was effective, it was an amazing achievement to be able to find a vaccine that has been so effective consistently, even with all the various variants that have come out, to keep people, prevent them from hospitalization and death. The other thing we can do for ourselves in the short run, too, is to maximize our own health in addition to getting vaccinated. We know that individuals who have underlying health conditions like obesity, heart disease, lung disease, et cetera, have higher rates of suffering from COVID. Try to choose now as much as you can to focus on your own health. Make your appointments and keep your appointments with your doctor. Try to eat healthfully. Try to move and get enough sleep. I know, again, that there are challenges based upon the communities that we live in and our economic status to be able to do that. But as much as possible, in cooperation with your healthcare provider, map out a plan to try to improve your health. And then, of course, the public health measures in terms of masking, distancing, avoiding settings indoor where there are lots of people, even if they're family, and use testing. Testing as much as possible. If you feel like you have symptoms, get tested. And, of course, proper hand washing.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tonight our focus is COVID-19 in underserved communities, wards 8 and 7. You have community activists who are working to combat the disparities of the positive cases and the impact of the coronavirus in those communities here in the district. Obviously, it is not particular to those communities here in our area, but in underserved areas, as Dr. Melissa Clark has said, it does have a disproportionate impact. Dr. Clark, also, and as you said, place, time, place, where you are has an impact on your health care. So let's talk a little bit about the lack of health care resources in communities, say, like east of the Anacostia River, in wards 7 and 8. What's it going to take to get the help that those residents need in terms of hospital, places they can go to get decent health care?
So there's a lot that has to happen. We often talk about the social determinants of health. Those factors that are social outside of the healthcare system that impact how healthy people are. And we see across the board in Ward 7 and Ward 8, largely due to economics, but other things such as the lack of available grocery stores. In Wards 1, 2, and 3 that we know are predominantly white, there are 8 grocery stores per ward. For Ward 7 and 8, it's only 1 per ward. We know health indices like obesity, twice as prevalent in Ward 8, heart attacks 3 times more prevalent. And these are reflective of the fact that there's food deserts, that there's not a dedicated hospital right now in Ward 7 and Ward 8. And even beyond the hospital, just primary care, being able to get primary mental health care, primary physical health care, a struggle. Levels of employment, education, safety, housing, the environment, all different. And that's why I say neighborhood and place is so important in terms of our health. I think there's some efforts in the district, other than the economic emphasis that Mr. Mustafa is working on, there's an effort to build a hospital right now in Ward 7 and 8. There are also, as far as COVID, there are neighborhood-based vaccination efforts that are taking places in houses of worship, which are coupled with the getting people healthy food, with health education, and linking people to social services. So there are some efforts underway, but there's a lot of work that has to be done to really address health equity, the opportunity for everyone to live, have an equal opportunity to live a long and healthy life. to make that uniform across the district. We have a long way to go.
How important is it for cities, communities, towns, whoever is collecting COVID-19 data? The district now is saying that they're going to include self-reported positive rapid antigen test results, those over-the-counter tests, in their numbers in terms of positive cases or negative, I believe. So, one, what do you think about that? Because, you know, folks could say, one, do you really want to use those take-home tests in your data? And two, how likely is it in any communities, but especially in those communities that are underserved, that folks are going to take the time to report those cases? So it's two parts. One, how important is it to get that information like that? And two, is it really likely that folks are going to take the time to report what that said on their little stick or their little, you know, red line that comes up?
Well, part of reporting has to do with internet access, because it's an app on your phone. Mm-hmm. And we know, again, that that's one of the disparities in the district is internet access in Ward 8. So I think the data will probably end up being skewed to be those households that have internet access and have an easy way of reporting the data. And it probably would be great to be able to see the data with and without it, so you can try with and without that the at-home test kit results, so you can analyze differently and sort of see where the gaps are in your data, understand what communities that data is coming from, because that could be analyzed as well. But overall, more data is better, because it helps us to understand who has access to rapid test kits, the accuracy of those test kits. And I would also just encourage everybody to not only rely on the rapid test kits if you have symptoms and it comes up negative, make sure you get in touch with your healthcare provider to get a PCR test, which is sort of the gold standard, more accurate, and also be tested for the flu and any other reasons why you might have those symptoms. All the at-home test can tell you is, do you have COVID or not? And occasionally there are false negatives, meaning you do have COVID and it's incorrect. So see your healthcare provider, get a PCR test, alternatively, if you have any doubt.
We're going to take a quick time out. This is the Insight segment. We'll be right back right after this break. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2. And 98.3 on your FM dial. This is the Insight segment. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Dr. Clark, Prince George's County public school students are going back into the classroom next Tuesday, January 18th. Is that a Monday or a Tuesday? What is today? I think that's a Monday. But January 18th, that is Tuesday. Okay, I was right the first time. January 18th on Tuesday. And the school system is going to provide for students, they're going to give them take-home COVID kits, the tests, take-home COVID kit tests, test kits, and also provide KN95, you know, medical surgical mask. What are your thoughts on that move? Will that help? Prince George's County is a predominantly jurisdiction with communities of color. Is that a move in the right direction?
Most definitely. So I use the analogy of going out into sub-zero weather. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The more layers that you have on, the less likely you are to feel cold or get frostbite. What Prince George's County is doing is trying to layer on the necessary protection to operate safely in the face of an incredibly infectious variant that's going on right now. And so it's really important for any school system to look at issues of testing, to look at protocols around how students arrive, move around the school, interact with each other, and stay distant as much as possible, to look at the use of masks, like the KN95 masks, and just a word on masks, cloth masks by themselves are really not effective against this in super infectious variant.
Wow.
It should be at least double masking.
Okay, I'm going to...
A cloth mask and a surgical mask.
Let me stop you there, Dr. Clark, because that's very important. Because I usually only wear a single mask. So what you're saying is this variant, because it is different and it is very infectious, and moves very quickly.
Very infectious, yeah.
Very
sure.
Infectious, thank you very much. That just that cloth mask is not enough. Either you need to double or get a medical KN95 or N95 mask. Is that clear?
That is absolutely right. And actually, this has been the guidance all along, ever since Delta came out, and the supply of KN95 and N95 masks increased so that everybody in the population can get them.
Mm-hmm.
As you remember, earlier on in the pandemic, they were in short supply, so they were trying to preserve them for healthcare workers.
Right.
And that's why they said get a cloth mask.
Mm-hmm.
And we've gotten so used to cloth masks that when that guidance came out in the summer to start to move to double masking KN95 or N95, it kind of got lost in all the noise. But now that Omicron has come out and it's so much more infectious, it's really important to surface that and emphasize it now. But back to the schools, the last thing that I would say is ventilation is so key, making sure that the facilities, that their ventilation is upgraded to HVAC experts' recommendations for making sure that the air is clean. And, I know it's in the middle of winter, so opening up windows is not feasible. But certainly as we get into warmer weather, opening up those windows and getting cross breeze is also very important. So this layered strategy is really important to keep spread down. What we do know is that as long as adults and out in the community are catching COVID, that more than likely children will be getting COVID. We know the spread between children is not as much as adults, but because those children go home to adult households with adults, when they come back to school, there is going to be spread between them unless these strategies are followed to a T.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. A little bit of time left in this very important conversation regarding COVID-19 and how it's affecting underserved communities in our region specifically, but just across the nation. Let's go back to the phone lines. Pam has been waiting patiently, calling from Silver Spring. Go right ahead with your question or comment.
Okay, yes, I'm just going to speak kind of fast. I've been just listening at everything that's been going on. I just want to make one comment, first of all. Well, I want to make two, but the first comment is the doctor mentioned that diseases were back way back in history, way back in Jesus' time. And yes, it was. That's a true effect. But the whole thing is it wasn't worldwide. The leprosy and things like that was on a regional basis. It wasn't a worldwide thing. This COVID thing is worldwide. And we were told the first shot was going to be effective. Then we end up taking a second shot. And now we're into a booster. And God knows what else ever we're going to be in. And then the doctor just mentioned for the school environment and things like that, to mask up and to mask and so forth. The whole thing is, it's all about experiment. They really don't know what is the cure for this whole thing. And on Channel 5 News on Monday, January the 10th, 7 a.m. news, it mentioned even about a Delta Chrome that's out here now that's beginning to affect people. So what is the solution? What is it going to be? Because they really don't know how to cure this thing.
Thank you so much, Pam. And I think her comments, Dr. Clark, are emblematic of a frustration, right? Folks feel like, okay, the ball keeps being moved down the line. But I'm going to guess from a medical standpoint, that's just what happens. You're learning different things as the variant moves and changes, and you have to react medically. Would that be the case, that as frustrated as folks are, there's not always clear-cut answers to this will stop it right now?
Look, I am frustrated, too. I hear it in her voice. I hear it in everybody's voice. And I want to just address a couple of issues that she made. We don't know that leprosy was not worldwide, because we only have that account in the Bible. We do know, though, that smallpox was worldwide, and that was starting in the 1600s. And it just has to do with the movement of populations. Nowadays, we move much more readily with plane travel, ship travel, trains, etc., and so disease spreads. And one thing I just want to emphasize is this is a first-in-a-lifetime pandemic for all the researchers and medical professionals that are dealing with this. So, yeah, we are learning as we go. And I think that's one thing that's been missing in the messaging. Don't rest your laurels. Don't park on any one piece of information. Understand that this is a rapidly evolving situation, just like a hurricane or a tornado coming through town. You don't know which direction it's going to take, but you do the best that you can with the information that you have to deal with where you are. And that's one thing that's frustrating for the public, because you kind of have to pay attention and keep up as it changes. Yes, two people have mentioned Deltacron, so I just want to address that. It is a new variant, and again, variants happen naturally in nature. Anytime an infection happens, nobody is producing them. They happen spontaneously. And so this appears to be a combination of Omicron and Delta. We don't know whether it's actually going to blossom into something that is as widespread as either Delta or Omicron. It is being watched, and as it evolves, communication will come out about it so that we can use the best information to address it. But there have been a lot of strides in this pandemic, from the development of the vaccine, and like I said, it still prevents hospitalization and death, even though it might not prevent somebody from getting infection. That infection, though, is still going to be mild. There have been therapeutics developed. So the medicines that are helping to keep people alive in the hospital when they arrive with COVID, plus we also have now outpatient treatments that have been approved, pills that you can take, as well as the antibody treatments that you can get if you're high risk for COVID because you have an underlying condition. So time is going to allow for more of these interventions, more treatments, more prevention methods to be brought to bear. But this was a first one in a lifetime pandemic, and the science is evolving as the virus teaches us more and more about itself.
She is Dr. Melissa Clark. She's the co-founder of Black's Coalition Against COVID-19 and CEO of the BHE Group, which stands for Be Health Empowered. Dr. Clark, if folks want more information that you've provided or want to get in touch with you, or a website that you recommend folks go to, is there any information that you'd like to provide folks before we sign off?
Absolutely. So I am on Facebook and YouTube every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. At Dr. Melissa Clark is my Facebook. That's Dr. Melissa, and Clark has an E. That's also my Instagram and Facebook handle. I would encourage you also to go to the Black Coalition Against COVID's website for up-to-date information about this pandemic. And as I always say on my show, I'm there, you know, interviewing guests, but we take live Q&A just like how we're doing right now. And I always say to my Be Health Empowered audience, be wise, be well, be safe, and be health empowered.
Fantastic advice. Dr. Clark, thank you so much for all of your advice this hour. We appreciate it, and we're sure that it has helped our listeners and the callers who called in. Thank you so much for being with us.
All right. Thanks for having me.
That's the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, January 12th. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Have a great night.